Off the Ball, GAA.
I mean, there was a lot of made of Congress at the weekend, and yes, a lot of different things came out of Congress. But for me, to be honest with you, I won't say it's off the ball. I think it's off the wall in terms of something like that coming into hurling.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Now Di Stefano. There's always tenor when he moves. And it's 7-2.
From the barrios of Buenos Aires to the roaring nights of Madrid, this episode traces the extraordinary journey of Alfredo Di Stefano, the visionary who redefined modern football. Born in Argentina, forged in the breakaway leagues of Colombia with Millonarios, and immortalized in Spain, he became the heartbeat of a dynasty. But what if the man they called La Saeta Rubia had taken a different path and gone to Real Madrid's biggest rivals, Barcelona? Find out on episode 6 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors podcast as to how European football could have been changed as we know it. Coming to you this Monday in your OTB football podcast feed for free.
Off the Ball Daily.
And folks, you're welcome to Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 7. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you're doing great around the country. What is coming up over the next 6 hours on your radio? Well, there'll be further analysis of Ireland's Six Nations win over Wales in the Sunday paper review. Adrian Barry was joined this week by Fiona Hayes, the ex-Irish international, and Declan Lynch to go through the best sports writing. That's coming up at 2 o'clock. And we're going to bring you a football hour with the ex-Republic of Ireland international Keith Tracy and David Snaid from 4pm. Rangers and Celtic in action today, the FA Cup as well. The Cheltenham Festival starts on Tuesday. Johnny Ward will be with me at 5 for the big Racing Pod radio preview. Get your pen and paper ready. We'll also keep you up to date on the matches in Division 1B of the National Hurling League. We'll also showcase all the reaction from the world of Gaelic games before we go off air at 7 o'clock. And Kathleen McNamee is a new trekker after the Republic of Ireland's 2-1 defeat to the Netherlands in the World Cup qualifier last night. You can WhatsApp us this afternoon, 087 9180 180. That is 087 9180 180. Adrian Barry joins me for the news round. How are you, Adrian?
I'm great, John. How are you keeping?
You must be, as a rugby fan, euphoric about just the beauty of the Six Nations, given what we've had over the last 24 hours. Not to mind Ireland, what happened yesterday was just sensational.
I think it's up there with the greatest weekend of Six Nations rugby ever.
Yeah.
Like, I know we are at times prone to hyperbole, but
And recency bias.
But I think you can't but sit here on a Sunday afternoon and say that we are celebrating Wales, and I know it's a slightly different reason than the other two, but we're absolutely celebrating Scotland and we're absolutely celebrating Italy. And, you know, as a collective, I can't remember the last time that would have been the case. And with so much open heading into the last weekend, is the nature of the Scotland win yesterday. 90 points in that match. Now, I know a lot of it was scoreboard massaging over the last 10 or 15 minutes from a French point of view. And Scotland had obviously given their all, but 90 points in a test match of rugby. I think there's like a big case to be made for Scotland, which is a concern for us, obviously, heading into next weekend, just given the monsoon nature of round one and what they've done subsequently when they've been allowed to play rugby. Phenomenal stuff. But so much open, JD, heading into the last weekend. We were having a conversation during the week about it been over after round four. France are going to beat Scotland. It's done and dusted. It's a bit of a dead duck of a Six Nations. It's turned out to be the very opposite.
I'm going to ask you a tricky trivia question before we get to Tommy Rooney. You can have a think about it.
Go on.
When was the last time Scotland beat Ireland at the new Aviva Stadium? Have a think about it there while I bring Tommy Rooney in there from Ennis for the Allianz Hurling League Division 1B game. Claire in Wexford, how are you, Tommy?
John, how you doing? You can come on in here to Zimmer Biomet Park, Kisoge. A lovely afternoon out west. A little overcast, a little breezy, but you're taking that.
Claire, I've got the job done, Tommy. They're into 1A for next season, 5 wins out of 5. And maybe nicely poised now under the radar for the Munster Championship.
Yeah, I think so, John. I'm hoping to catch up with Brian Lohan after the game and looking forward to it too, because I'm sure he's going to be in good form. He's used 35 players. Mark Sheedy, a young fella from Six Mile Bridge, is starting in goals for Clare today, making his debut. And we know all about goalkeepers from Six Mile Bridge playing in goals for Clare and the impact they can have. So I'm interested to see young Mark Sheedy this afternoon. And he is the 35th player that Brian Lohan is using in Division 1B. So win all your games so far. Get to spread the, you know, the playing resources around your panel. Find a couple of young fellas. Like, their half forward line today is Jack Kerwin, Dermot Stritch and Jack O'Neill. I'm really looking forward to seeing the three of them in action. They're at home in front of a really good crowd in what's going to be a really competitive game. Show us what you can do. Put your hand up and show that you can break into this Clare team for the Munster Hurling Championship, because that's what it's going to be all be about in a couple of weeks' time. And I think it's been a really positive couple of weeks for Clare.
Wexford have been in a battle with Dublin for second place. Dublin had a big win yesterday over Down. Now, both counties will be soon trying to get out of the Leinster round robin, but Wexford are hoping to get something out of this today.
Definitely, and it's a big goal for both of these to join Clare in Division 1A next year, and they both need it for their progress. I was in Croke Park for that belter of a game between Dublin and Wexford, a mad game altogether. Kevin Foley with two goals that day for Wexford, and they're probably kicking themselves at the end that they didn't come away with a win, but in ways they're probably lucky too that they, you know, the Dubs could have caught them as well. The Dubs putting up that big score and Down last night means that, you know, with Kildare to follow in round seven, Wexford essentially need a win today. Like, they're not going to be able to rely on score difference. I think the Dubs is up and around 50 odd points at this stage. I haven't got a live table in front of me, but they had a healthy one going into it and they won really well last night, so the Dubs are way ahead in terms of score difference. Wexford need a win today. In a lot of ways, that probably cleans up the way you got to attack this game, the aggression you got to play with, the intent. This is championship really for Wexford in a lot of ways. It may not get to that pitch, but we saw last night with Limerick and Cork. And while there may not have been, shadow boxing is a term that gets thrown around a lot, may not have been shadow boxing. Like, there was no love lost in that field last night between Limerick and Cork. There was a lot of hard hitting. There was a couple of hurlies snapped. There was plenty of yellow cards dished out. And there was some good hurling played as well. But again, the intensity is that it can't be what it's going to be in 6 weeks' time in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. It just can't be. You can't always play at that level. But it was still really good last night. And I'd be expecting a really good game in front of us here in Cusick Park.
Yeah, Dublin 59 plus 59, Wexford plus 13. Okay. Is there any bearing from that Limerick-Cork game last night, an 8-point win for Limerick? Do you think there's anything that Ben O'Connor or John Colley would take out of that for not only what could be a league final, but definitely the round-robin game, which has happened at the end of April?
I took it afterwards, John, that they were both happy enough. Ben O'Connor, I managed to catch him afterwards for a quick chat, and you might hear it later on the show at some stage.
Yeah, we will,
It's up on our social channels anyway. Like, Ben was quite reserved yesterday, and I think under it all, he was happy enough. He had just lost his first game as Cork manager, but I'm sure he had seen enough. Like, again, talk about using players across the league campaign. We're talking about Wexford here in Division 1B. Like, Damien Cahalan was the 33rd player I clocked last night that Ben O'Connor has started in his first campaign. That's fantastic for a new management team to get eyes on that many players. And he had a 100% record going into the weekend. He had made 8 changes. I'm sure there was players that started yesterday for Cork that will not start in the Munster Championship for them. But it's still really important to get minutes into these players, get a proper look at them, but also keep them happy that they're going to be cooking along and training over the next couple of months and maybe driving on certain fellas in different areas. And that squad depth is so important. And you have to look no further than Limerick and the awesome strength of that team. Like, physically, in terms of skill. Like, there was times last night, John, I was looking and going, you know, I was nearly expecting Aaron Gillan and Shane O'Brien to do more last night. But they didn't really have to do more. Like, O'Brien scores a goal after a minute. Gallan scores a couple of brilliant points. He wins a penalty. O'Brien wins a couple of frees. But they also have Adam English sniping a couple of points. Colin O'Neill with 1-2, a brilliant 1-2. Keane Lynch scores a point and gets man of the match. And he was just Keane Lynch last night in the ruck. Like, the speed at which he was attacking ball, winning breaking ball, and slipping it off so quickly. He actually got stung twice by Sean Stack, or definitely once for an illegal hand pass. I couldn't tell. A fair play to the referee that can spot it. It just looked like Lynch was playing at a different speed last night. And Limerick's strength and depth that they've built over the years, and the manner in which Kiley has maybe phased fellas out and brought other fellas through at the right time, has allowed them to build a really awesome squad. And Cork,
the likes of Cork, the likes of Clare, the likes of the All-Ireland champions, Tipperary, they're all trying to do that over the last couple of weeks. We're just getting ready for the anthem here, John. A 1:15 p.m. throw-in in Cusick Park. So I'm sure you'll be back to me across the afternoon for updates. I'll just mention Clare do have a strong full forward line today. Shane Meehan, Peter Duggan and David Reedy all starting up front for them. So it'll be interesting to see how they go too.
Okay, great stuff. Tommy Rooney there, GA correspondent in Ennis ahead of Clare and Wexford. It was a 3:19 to 20 points win for Limerick over Cork. Adrian, Aidan O'Connor hitting a 1:11. Limerick taking the bragging rights. Positive result for John Cody's men against Galway in the last round, and a positive result for Cork against Offaly will deliver a league final meeting between Limerick and Cork before they meet in the Munster Round Robin on April the 26th. The Kilkenny suffered a heavy defeat in Salt Hill. Galway winning by 35 points to 17. Galway with 13 different scorers, including Aaron Nyland, who struck over 13 points. Kilkenny's heaviest defeat since the 50s.
An incredible thing. I hadn't realised it was that far back, but Derek Ling was spiky afterwards on the TV match interview, as you'd expect him to be. Definitely a surprise nature to that. A little bit of the Wild West about some of the results. A little bit of the league about it. Maybe it just all becomes a bit clearer over the next few weeks as to where things are going. But that will be one that'll rock Kilkenny foundations, you would think. Give Galway a lot of hope, JD, as they tend to get around this time of the year that, you know, can often get quenched a bit later.
Well, I feel that Micheál Donoghue is the Cyril Farrell of our time.
Right.
And I think if anybody's going to get something out of Galway, it'll be Micheál Donoghue.
Yeah.
And the young players coming through. Kilkenny, maybe it's hyperbole, but I'd worry about Kilkenny. Are Kilkenny, who are the establishment county, the Real Madrid of hurling, are in Kilkenny in decline? No minor All-Ireland since 2014, one to under 20 in the last 10 years. I know they were reached two finals against Limerick and they have narrowly lost to the last two All-Ireland winners in the championship. But this is the longest drought since 1904 when they won their first All-Ireland. This is the longest drought in their history for Lee McCarthy Cup, 11 years. I just wonder, in that region of the country, Waterford have struggled in Munster in recent years. Wexford haven't been in an All-Ireland final in 30 years in hurling. Just worry a little bit for the region, the southeast of region, that hurling, look, people go, well, Ballygunner are the All-Ireland champions, but ultimately your massive currency is All-Ireland senior inter-county title. Just would, look, Kilkenny might just completely blow that away now in the Leinster round robin, but you'd have to think at the moment Galway are favourites to win it.
Yeah, well, the cliche about Kilkenny, I'm sure, is probably still true, although your point about the underage success maybe plays out a slightly different story in that, like, you play hurling in Kilkenny and that's kind of about it. I know Tommy Welch was on with us probably about a year ago and he was giving out that a lot of the players are getting sucked in their local club in Tullerone into the soccer club, and that is seen as a big threat, as it is in most communities around the place. But then equally, you know, it is a county where you play hurling and that's what you do. There's no Gaelic football scene there whatsoever. And maybe it is just one of those blips, but definitely major warning sign from that game last night. Double scores, incredible thing.
Where are the geniuses? You think Eddie Kerr on the hurling pitch, DJ Carey and Henry Shefflin, were waiting for the next genius to come through, I think, Kilkenny. Dublin walloping down 6:32 to 18 points in Division 1B at Parnell Park yesterday. John Heatherton scoring 2-3. Aside from the Clare-Wexford game, which we've spoken about, Kildare meeting Carlow at 2 o'clock in Newbridge in Division 1B. We also have Division 2 games. Kerry 1-5, Mayo 3 points at the moment. Leash and Meath and Westmeath and Derry meet at 2 o'clock. And in Division 3 of the Hurling League, Donegal and Wicklow at the moment in action. Wicklow 2 points, Donegal 1 for Manaplay Roscommon at 2 o'clock in Enniskillen. Division 4 of the Little Ladies National Football League this afternoon, Leitrim against Carlow, Offaly Derry, Wicklow Sligo and Kilkenny Longford we have this afternoon. It is Rangers 0, Celtic 0 in the Scottish Cup at Ibrox. Liam Scales captaining Celtic today with Callum McGregor injured, as is Kieran Tierney. They are not involved in that game. St Mirren against Partick Thistle at 7:30. Fulham against Southampton as well. We have FA Cup action goalless at the moment at Craven Cottage into the second half there. Port Vale and Sunderland kick off at 1:30. Leeds United and Norwich City at 3:30 at Elland Road. Last night, Omar Marmoush scored twice as Manchester City won 3-1 away to Newcastle United to book their place in the quarterfinals. Pep Guardiola was booked. He'll receive a 2-game touchline ban. Chelsea overcame Wrexham 4-2 after extra time. Arsenal on the hunt still for the quadruple. 2-1 winners over Mansfield Town earlier in the day. In the Championship this afternoon, QPR play Middlesbrough at 4:30 at Loftus Road. So as we touched upon at the start of the show, Ireland have got a chance now in a three-horse race for the Six Nations title going into Super Saturday next weekend. So Ireland playing Scotland at the Aviva Stadium next Saturday after the Scots shocked France an incredible match at Murrayfield, 50 points to 40 in favour of Gregor Townsend's side. Italy then, at their 33rd attempt, over a quarter of a century, beat England finally, prevailing in Rome by 23 points to 18. Did you work out the trivia question?
Give me the question again. I didn't take the easy solution at Google, by the way.
That's admirable. For all the table quizzes.
Foolish, quizzes. Someone say.
When is the last time Scotland beat Ireland at the new Aviva Stadium in rugby?
In the
Six Nations.
Yeah. Well, it was no time in the last 11 years, so I mean, I'm just going to go with the easy thing and say 2024.
Never.
Never. Okay, because it wasn't the Aviva Stadium.
It was Croke Park.
You were going to give me some sort of a curveball on that, JD. I should have.
I'll be in the headlock after the show. I'll be in the headlock.
Never.
But Scotland played like France. And then France played like France in for maddening style.
Yeah. The one thing that was evident to me was like the only way to play France is to attack them at all times, like trying to soak up their genius ability to score tries is a bit of a fool's errand. And you what's not it? Listen, how many teams are ever going to score 50 points against France? Not many, you know. And it was a mad, wild game. You're looking ahead to next weekend. Saturday, you have Ireland-Scotland at 10 past 2 at the Aviva. You have Wales-Italy, which suddenly becomes a really interesting fixture at 20 to 5. And then you have France-England at 10 past 8 from the Stade de France that evening. Now, pre-tournament, you'll remember Steve Borthwick got plenty of barbs afterwards, and I'm not sure they were all fully deserved, but he was talking about, you know, hopefully we'll be headed for a showdown in Paris in the last weekend and get your tickets booked. And everybody did assume, you know, like the fixtures are kind of done up on the basis of what the top brass feel is going to be the key fixture in this entire thing. And their view was that it was going to be France v England. Now, England are, it turns out, playing for something to avoid the wooden spoon. It's an incredible turn of events, but I'm not sure there's a sequence of results next weekend that will give us the Six Nations, JD, any manner of a win for France, regardless of anything else that happens. We'll just hand them the trophy. They could draw, in fact, and, you know, get the try bonus point and get 3 points out of that and still win the thing. So I think it's a really long shot, particularly given, I think, the ebb that England are at. It is hard to see an eventuality where Ireland win it.
Steve Borthwick has been given the dreaded vote of confidence by the Rugby Football Union. Bill Sweeney, their CEO, saying that Steve and his coach and team are working tirelessly to make improvements. We remain fully committed to supporting them and the players as they face France this weekend and then look ahead to the Nations Championship. Part of that support has been open about what's not gone right during the Six Nations, making sure everyone's got a clear sense of how we move through these challenges together.
Yeah.
That'll be something we'll be talking and working through in the days and weeks ahead.
Well, the days could be the crucial bit of that.
I was going back through my Rothmans, in rugby terms. The last time England lost four games in the championship was 50 years ago, 1976, in the Five Nations.
Wow.
They have got the wooden spoon. They got the wooden spoon in 1983, but obviously we have now a Six Nations. So Italy will now go three seasons without the wooden spoon. Rugby in England is the establishment, right? I can't see how Steve Borthwick survives this.
I would agree.
Of the 10 World Cups that we've had, England have the only Northern Hemisphere team to win it, and they've been in the final four times. Can't see them allowing, they expect to win World Cup every time they go there. Be going to Australia expecting to win it next year. They won't be able to do that the way they're playing at the moment. And look at the way Stuart Lancaster and Andy Farrell, great coaches, and obviously Andy Farrell possibly our most successful ever coach, they were run out of town after the 2015 World Cup when England failed to get out of the group.
Yeah, I would agree with that, John. I think there was a big fight back expected from England after they lost 11 points at Murrayfield. There was a big fight back expected from England after they lost double scores to us at Twickenham. And then obviously we saw what happened yesterday. And like the methodical nature of the victory, as much as anything else from an Italy point of view, they're behind. They start chipping away at the scoreboard with a couple of penalties. They're building it up nicely. This is not like some sort of a fluke. They got a couple of handy tries and won it. Win. That's not what this was. It was a really methodical filleting of that English team in the end. They get over the line 23 points to 18. England do have a couple of chances late in the game. If they can keep the ball, if they can keep momentum going, they might be able to get over. They obviously, penalty would not have been good enough. They're going for the try. They come up short. Unbelievable scenes from an Italian point of view. But I would agree that it's very difficult to see a scenario next weekend. Like we talk about a bounce back. France are much more likely to have a serious kickback after, you know, what happened to them against Scotland, and it is difficult to see a scenario where, you know, I could see France beating them by 25 points easily enough. It's difficult to see a scenario in that where Steve Borthwick survives.
Like, we got a triple crown, obviously, to go for, which is still worth something.
Yeah.
And second place, at least in the championship, if we win against Scotland. So
I mean, nothing certain, JD. I mean, looking at that Scotland game yesterday, they quality of their scrum, you know, apart from against, they blitzed the French scrum twice in the first half. They're making a substitution just before halftime to bring Darcy Ray off in the front row and bring on Xander Fagerson. Like, this is a serious outfit. Who, that is a flex. You're bringing that player on a line just before halftime into an already dominant Scottish scrum. You would be concerned from an Irish point of view. That said, I do think that, I'm not saying regardless of the result next weekend, we want to win the Triple Crown. I don't think we're going to win the Six Nations. We want to win the Triple Crown. We want to continue our run against Scotland. We want to continue to build on all the momentum that we've built up over the last number of weeks. I do think that there's been the unearthing of several players. I think we can be competitive with Scotland. I am saying, regardless of the result, unless the result was to get away from us, I think it's still going to be a massive positive of a Six Nations from Andy Farrell's point of view, to a degree, almost regardless of the result.
This is the News Round and Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. John Duggan and Adrian Barry with you. Rory McIlroy withdrew with back spasms out of his third round at the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill in Florida yesterday. The Master Champion due to defend the Players' Championship at Sawgrass next week. Let's hope he's okay. Only the second time McIlroy's pulled out of a PGA Tour event because of injury. The last time was 2013. Mm. In terms of the golf itself, round three was suspended due to darkness. Daniel Berger leads on 13 under by two shots from Akshay Bhatia.
Yeah, poor old Shane Lowry missing the cut.
Well, understandable, really.
What's the word on Rory? Is this something that...
I think it was just a twinge that turned into spasms. And okay. He just said, okay, precautionary. We'll I think the vibe out there from the media is that he's going to be okay for the Players. Yeah. But, I mean, the Masters is only a month away. I mean, imagine Rory McIlroy not defending the Masters because of injury.
Well,
where would that Irish menu go?
I know. Well, he'd still have to do the menu, right? We're definitely saying he's still obliged to do that as long as he can get out there at all. You're often surprised, like, I've been a very casual and infrequent player of the game. You know, your back is such a vulnerable area for that. Considering the coiled nature of every single shot you take, you know, 70-odd shots... possibly in more in the direction of 100 for somebody like me, but you know, not all of them, of course, obviously several putts within that, but like, just given that coiled nature of your spine, what age is Rory now? He's
36.
You know, that's a lot of mileage on the clock, and you just hope that, listen, we don't want to exaggerate, it could be something very small that he ends up getting over and it's no big deal, and they obviously care for their backs and they do all their S&C work and all that type of stuff, so hopefully not a big deal.
Many people were up for the Formula One this morning. Were you one of them?
I was not, John.
Are you going to ease into it, are you?
No. I ease myself into it. And by ease myself into it, what I mean is, if by the last race of the season there's something competitive on the line, I might throw it on. I don't know. Like, it had something of a revival around the time that Drive to Survive obviously came out.
Well, the Netflixization of it.
And that brought in an audience for a while. Did that audience hang around? I wasn't one of them.
Mercedes driver George Russell, though, has something to cheer about. He won the season opening in Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne, a first win for the team in 7 years. The British driver was followed home by his teammate, Kimi Antonelli. Ferrari's Charles Leclerc finished third. The other Ferrari driver, Lewis Hamilton, was fourth. World champion Lando Norris ended in fifth in his McLaren. Red Bull's Max Verstappen coming home in sixth position. Alex Dunn, our great hope from Offaly, crashed out in F2 in their first Grand Prix of the year in Australia. He was handed a punishment as well for the next race, the Offaly driver to drop five places on the grid. We have the small matter of Cheltenham beginning on Tuesday, and the Willie Mullins trained mare Lossiemouth will run in the champion hurdle at Cheltenham. She's won three times at the festival, but she's never been in the champion hurdle before. So that's probably the big, I suppose, big news in terms of the last 24 hours news-wise. We got a new racing pod club, Adrian, we've set up.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the emails landing in my inbox, John.
If you want to receive some exclusive tips, charity bets for Cheltenham by email and learn about our race day giveaways in 2026, tickets to be won, go to offtheball.com/racingpodclub to sign up. It's absolutely free, the Racing Pod Club here on Off the Ball. We have action at Nace today. First race there at 2 o'clock, the Leinster National at 4:37. Still goalless between Rangers and Celtic in the Scottish Cup. You had Declan Lynch and Fiona Hayes in the papers this week. Adrian, what was the flavour?
Oh, John, I mentioned it and we'll be hearing it later on, but it's certainly the piece of the day, okay? And like, up there for piece of the year so far, for sure. David Walsh is such a brilliant writer, and I know I've made that point previously here, but, you know, given that he is, in the autumn of his career, I think it's fair enough to say that to be churning out such pieces of such quality is an incredible thing. And it's again the case in the Sunday Times today. There's a photograph of Harry Redknapp grinning at the camera here, full head to toe of him out his back garden. Now, his back garden is a little bit like sort of the old White Hart Lane pitch here in the background. It's a sizable thing. Now, you can imagine David Beckham in a similar kind of a pose, right? And everything would be as pristine and every blade of grass would be manicured to an inch of his life. But you just take a glance at Harry's runners and you realise they weren't bought today or yesterday. And then also, if you take a little look out the back, you can see a ladder been propped up against a door. It's a very Harry Redknapp thing. Anyway, this article is absolutely brilliant. It's about Harry, the football man, the racing man, and it gives a great insight into his background. Can I read you a small passage from it?
Of course you can, yes.
This is really tremendous writing, and it's tremendous stuff from Harry Redknapp. It's David Walter's piece, and this quote is from the great Harry Redknapp and his relationship at racing particularly. "My nan would take bets from all the old girls in the street," he said, "line them up on the mantelpiece, and when Cyril came around selling the Star and Evening News and the Standard, Nan would drop the bets into his bag. Off-course betting was then illegal. Nan got nicked on a regular basis." Now, I'll allow you to recover from that one before we get moving on to the next bit. "Nan got nicked on a regular basis. I'd be coming from school and would see her being taken away in a black Mariah," for people of a certain age will remember that was a police truck. "Don't worry about these B words," she'd say. "I'll be back in an hour. Your dinner's in the oven." They'd give her a slap on the wrist and she'd be home in an hour. Absolutely fantastic.
It's like to see something you see in the cinema.
The imagery that you can create around that, and it talks about, you know, he goes on to talk about Nan would always let me have a bet, 3 threepenny cross doubles and a threepenny treble, which is not an easy phrase to say for an Irish person, but it's marvellous stuff. There's great pieces in it across the board. There's great detail in it about the end of days at Tottenham. He was always let pick the team. He said Daniel Levy, the former infamous chairman, would never really be in touch with him too much about anything to do with selection or anything really to do with the team. But he recalls a Friday before a Saturday game, about 4 or 5 weeks before he eventually got the boot, and he paints the picture of taking a phone call from Daniel Levy. Daniel said, "Hello, Harry, it's Daniel." "Hello, Daniel," I said. "Yeah, I'm fine. We have a few injuries. Who are you going to play up front tomorrow?" I said, "Robbie Keane." He said, "Robbie Keane?" I said, "Yeah, Robbie Keane." Then he said, "Why don't you speak with Raphael van der Vaart about who he wants to play with?" I said, "What's it got to do with Raphael van der Vaart, Daniel? I picked the team, not Raphael van der Vaart." He said, "Well, I thought it'd be interesting to see what Rafa thought, you know." "No, not really," I said. "Robbie Keane is playing. I get to Manchester, I'm checking into the hotel. Now, at this point, I've never spoke with Joe Lewis, the owner, not once in my life. My phone rings. Hi, Harry, it's Joe Lewis' secretary. Joe would like to speak with you." "Hello, Joe." Joe comes from the Burdett Road in East London, where I came from. He says, I like that forward line of yours, Aaron Lennon, Raphael van der Vaart and Roman Pavlyuchenko. That Robbie Keane is useless." Now, do remember, this is from the owner of Tottenham at the time, about what I think it's fair enough to say, and not just in hindsight, is a club legend in Robbie Keane. "I said," says Harry, "that's your opinion, Joe." He then said, "Why don't you ask Raphael van der Vaart who he wants to play with?" I said, "What's it got to do with Raphael van der Vaart? I picked the team, not van der Vaart." "I'll tell you what Joe then said to me. "If Robbie Keane plays tomorrow, I won't even watch it on television. That choice is up to you, Joe," I said. "Yeah, it effing is," he said. And he went on to praise, you know, Robbie Keane and what a great player he was for him. But incredible stuff. And if you're Robbie Keane today reading, he says he had never told that story before, and you're reading that the chairman and the owner of the club had less than good things to say about you towards the end of days, doesn't reflect well on them.
I used to hide behind the curtains when The Incredible Hulk came on, which was a TV series, 70s and 80s, about a guy gets so angry he turned green and he turned into a monster. And I feel so much rage about the Spurs ownership, having read that I could turn into The Incredible Hulk.
Like, it was impressive in a lot of ways that they never got in touch with him about it. They just left him at it. And then, obviously, there have been conversations.
It's a real way of just saying, you know, we own the club, mate. We can make this call. We can do what we like. We can make the call. We can make you uncomfortable. And that's not a great look.
It felt to me that Raphael van der Vaart had gone to Daniel Levy or one of them and said, "Here, well, I want to play with Pavlyuchenko or whatever. I don't want to play with Robbie Keane." Because why do they keep saying, "Will you speak to Raphael van der Vaart what he wants to play with?"
It's
maybe that's wrong, but that's how it reads to me.
It's 25 years of an ownership that's not loved at Spurs, and maybe they're actually missing Daniel Levy. Maybe he could actually even keep them up, because there's actually doesn't seem to be anything there now to replace Daniel Levy at the moment. But the best thing that the club could happen to the club is for it to be sold.
Could we get something strong in here for John? Because I'm not sure I'd ever would.
I'm going to last at 7 o'clock.
Words to come out of your mouth.
What?
About Daniel Levy.
What?
That maybe the best thing would be that if he came back. Or that he never left. Sorry.
Well, until the summer.
Yeah.
But the best thing would be the club to be sold.
Sorry about this, where I'm going next.
Go on.
You're enjoying Arsenal's inevitable run to the title. Shane McGrath in the Mail on Sunday. Nothing wrong with winning ugly. He says Arsenal fans can relish their tortuous corner kick routines, the sight of players going down as if stricken by Darth Vader's death grip, and the dull patterns of play that see the ball circulated with the deafening hopelessness of a middle manager's memo that it leaves everyone else frustrated or simply turning off. It doesn't matter. Arsenal winning ugly, who cares, is really his point.
Well, I think that he's right, and I think that it's been 22 years, and Mikel Arteta is under massive pressure there after three second-place finishes. They did play really well the first season that they really challenged City, and then they kind of ran out of steam with injuries and that, but teams can evolve. Once they get over the line, they can evolve, and Arsenal have played really good football in the Champions League. I mean, look at the way they played against Real Madrid last season, and remember Tyrone with the All-Ireland in 2003, and then 2 years later, they played Kerry, one of the greatest finals you're ever going to see, and evolved into a better team. France in 2000 were a better team than they were in 1998 when they won the World Cup, so... For Arsenal, it is about one thing now, and it's about winning. And to beat Manchester City in the title race would be no mean feat.
Well, it's an all bets are off scenario. You're 7 points clear in the league.
Win it.
Obviously, with a game extra played. This is not about winning pretty. Who cares about that, you know?
No.
That's very much...
Football evolves, though. I mean, people have... Okay, the tiki-taka era is not what it was, and it'll evolve again.
Conor McKeown's piece is the other piece I want to touch on.
That was scathing.
Hold the back page in the Sunday Independent. It was scathing...
In the right way.
And also, a grim enough read, like...
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Comes with the usual caveats of being a brilliant piece of writing from the pen of Conor McKeown, as it tends to be. But don't judge Joxer if he stalls the van. This World Cup is tainted, and there's lots more to come. So obviously, leaning into the famous Christy Moore song and going down that road. But, you know, there's a picture of grinning, smiling... Gianni Infantino on the back page here with a USA red hat on his head, or putting a USA red hat on his head. I give you the closing bits and it kind of sums the piece up. He talks about mixing sport and politics, and that of course they mix. He says, you didn't ask for Trump to come over. This obviously relates to Trump doing big. There's loads of aspects to it. There's the Israeli football matches and plenty more besides as well. There's the World Cup, of course, but Trump doing big, Irish Open. You didn't ask for Trump to come over. You just don't want to see Rory smoke. You just want to see Rory smoke a few on the dunes of West Clare. And fair enough, it's a free country. We can go if we like. But it seems like the sort of story that future grandkids might not be terribly impressed by. We can't plead ignorance anymore. Acknowledge or ignore. Care or don't care. But we must choose. It's a consequence of war. They have spoiled the innocent pleasure of watching sport. So it's a grim thought, but he certainly holds up a mirror to us about our choices when it comes to sport.
Well, it's like the year I was born, the World Cup was run in the middle of a military junta in Argentina when people were getting killed, and it doesn't seem that the world has, in ways it's got better, but in other ways it hasn't. I think the only person coming out of this with any credit at the moment is Pedro Sanchez in Spain.
Yeah.
And nobody, it seems, feels that they have the votes or the willingness or the ability to challenge and remove Gianni Infantino, because it feels like he's a lot of votes in his locker, and the status quo will prevail.
And, you know, the evidence of when he came in himself was that we were expecting this blank canvas and a new world. Can I take one slight tangent off the piece just to mention that, you know, Conor McKeown obviously references Joxer. Joxer might not bother looking for the jump leads at all. As in, you know, given everything that's gone on in the world of sport. Fittingly, I was at Christy Moore the week before last.
How good was it?
Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Christy Moore has obviously built up a reputation for being quite spiky. Doesn't want people singing, doesn't want people clapping, doesn't want to take requests. He did all the opposite of that over the course of it. Was taking requests left, right and centre, had pre-taken requests, so was able to do call-outs. Some lad goes to the toilet, is on the way back, shouts up, play north and south. I will, John. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. The reference here, or the relevance here, is that about halfway through the set, he stalls the ball, as he said himself, and he invites out a brilliant, brilliant Ilan Piper, by the name of Sean McKeown, who I believe to be Conor McKeown's
brother. Very good. Very good.
Yeah. So there's some circular relevance there somewhere.
Can I say that the voyage of Off the Ball Sunday is going to be here till 7 o'clock, including the pay-per-view with yourself, Declan Lynch and Fiona Hayes at 2, Adrian. Beautiful. Thank you for the news round. 1-0 to Celtic, away to Rangers and the Scottish Cup at Ibrox. They've just scored, and we're going to keep you updated on everything between now and 7. After the break, we're going to catch up with our own reporter, Kathleen McNamee in Utrecht, after the Republic of Ireland women's team suffered a 2-1 defeat by the Netherlands in their World Cup qualifier. Stay with us.
Off the Ball Daily.